doing something around Safer Internet Day, which is next Tuesday. So really what we're going to try and talk about today, which I'm not sure we'll succeed on, is cybersecurity, so of safer internet. So that's really the essence of today. We're going to record the session, Miles has put up a privacy notice, just to let you know why we're doing that, what we're doing with it, and how to object to that if you don't want to have any personal data that's collected in the recording used, etc. So joined by Dave and Ollie as usual, but I think Dilik's on and maybe Jasmine's on and maybe Matthew's on, so maybe we'll dive down to some other ways with them. So Dave, how's your week been? Ollie, how's your week been?
Busy this week.
You sound like it's a surprise, as if Noah had to get off the golf course, and do a bit of work.
Yeah, well, there was that slight inconvenience, but no, it's just been busy trying to address bits around training. Really, I've had quite a few people wanting a bit of board training, some of the additional training requirements, general training with some new clients. That I've been putting training materials together with, trying to keep on top of report writing for the outsourced DPO side of things. So I need to get that finished off as well. It's kind of just felt busy this week.
All right. How about you, Ollie? What have you been up to?
Get me off the golf course.
Yeah, likewise. I'm not entirely sure where the week's actually gone. It's been one of them for me. I sort of woke up this morning, I was like, Christ, the weekend almost already again. What have I been doing? Who knows? Plenty, as ever. To be honest, I can't pick out anything of significance off the top of my head, if I'm being completely honest.
What were you doing on your study day yesterday?
So yesterday I was on a day as part of my practitioner's qualification. Been working on that. Yesterday I went through the modules on subject rights, data security, and notification requirements around personal data breaches. So all very interesting. Oh, wow. Some of it, I suppose, relevant to today, I guess. We're talking about
exactly.
Security.
I was going to say, hand in the baton to you that if you did security yesterday.
Yeah, maybe not.
Was there anything new that came out of that then, Oliver, or anything that kind of stood out for you within that kind of material that you're looking at?
There are a few bits and pieces that we can maybe talk about later. Something that was quite good, quite interesting, is that as part of it, I was required to read the Article 29 Working Parties Guidelines on Breach Reporting Requirements, which is interesting. That's, and a very good read. I say a very good read if you're in the industry, I suppose. I'm not going to be recommending it to my family anytime soon. A few good bits and pieces. I'm sure we can talk about them in due course if relevant.
So what have you seen in the news? I noticed that I only noticed this today, and Dilik very kindly alerted me to it. The ICO is now set a date for their practitioners conference of the 14th of April and has opened their website for taking bookings. It's all being done digitally and remotely, so that's great, because usually we can hit and miss whether we get a ticket to it as attendees, but this year everybody will be able to attend, and they've got some quite interesting topics on there, including the age appropriate design code of conduct and accountability and international transfers. So recommend people to jump on that, and I mean they'll probably record the sessions and push them out, but it's nothing like joining the actual thing live, is it? It's a pretty good day actually of subject matter, really. So that's worth having a look at. I noticed Ollie, the CNIL find a controller and a processor for inadequate technical measures. It's interesting to me that they find both the controller and the processor. And basically, there was a weak password regime. So, they'd had quite a few breaches through credential stuffing. I think I wrote a blog on this, actually. But that was interesting that they found both parties.
Yeah, there are a couple of bits that are interesting to this. So, as you rightly say, both parties were fined. The controller far more heavily than the processor, it is worth noting. But it's still fines of €150,000 for the controller and €75,000 for the processor. So not insignificant amounts. as you say, it was failures relating to security primarily. So the fact that there was no sort of attempts even at multi-factor authentication, no use of captures, anything like that. And they therefore fell victim to credential stuffing breaches.
Just for either Phil or Ollie, for those who might not know what credential stuffing is, would anybody like just give a brief explanation of what it might be?
Yeah, well, basically, yeah, there's a, I mean, if you use Google Chrome and you log on to Google Chrome every now and again, you'll get an alert saying, you know, you've got insecure passwords. Basically, there's a whole load of passwords that have been hacked and are available on the dark web. And what happens is people buy those lists or get hold of those lists, and then they just load them into a computer program. And it batters a website with a variety of combinations of usernames and passwords. And if it gets in, it gets in. So they basically stuff the authentication credentials into a web page or a database login screen and see what happens, whether they can get in. So people use the same password and username combinations, email address and a standard password, and it's being compromised somewhere. Then they run the risk of having other databases that they use those combinations on broken, basically being broken into and then suffering a personal data breach. And that's what's happened over here. I mean, there's a few things to take out of that, because I was doing some software testing the other week, logged on to quite a few things, including bizarrely I found a really, really quite interesting which I talked about last week, privacy governance management platform called Sears. But there was no authentication when you log on. You're basically shoving an email and a password. It can be anybody's email, to be fair, and you can log in, so it doesn't validate that that's a valid email address. And these are the kind of sites that you know really should be looking at themselves, and you know, because we don't do any authentication of the username and password, then you know they're doing exactly what these two companies did that were fined in France. So you know, we should be looking at thinking, right, okay, well, you know, what have we got in our login? And I have to say, you know, there's a few of our clients that have got, I think, pretty flaky log on arrangements when you go onto their consumer facing websites.
So what's quite interesting there, there's two bits and quite interesting really, is credential stuffing is in essence using a combination of username and password potentially that the individual uses across multiple platforms, and that kind of then backs into a little bit of brute force attacks, isn't it, where you're trying to throw something at something until it breaks, in that kind of sense. The point I was actually trying to get to though is that multi-factor authentication now would be considered quite commonplace and state of the art, and under Article 32 for technical and organizational measures and considering state of the art from a security point, would you necessarily see it nowadays that those that aren't operating under a multi-factor authentication kind of program or regime, whatever you want to call it, would they then themselves potentially not be
using state of the art?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what the Canel was saying on to Ollie, that you know this technology is available. It's you know free. Some of it, capture is free. You know, so why aren't you using it? It is the state of the art. You're not using state of the art. You're in breach of Article 32. I think that's what the essence of the Canel's approach wasn't it, Ollie?
Yeah. Essentially, they've said that in the main, they would have expected a higher standard of security, and then also subsequently, they basically said there are sort of no real excuses considering that there are sort of quick wins that are achievable with relatively accessible measures. So as we said, the use of capture, for instance, and things like that, and therefore there's just sort of no excuse for this degree of lack of security controls in place.
I mean, the sites like LinkedIn got hacked, didn't it, a few years ago? So everyone's logon credentials for LinkedIn, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, were in the public domain. So if you'd use the same logon credentials in, you know, a business environment, you know, Dropbox, file transfer, you know, all these different tools that might be used in a business setting, then again, that's a vulnerability, isn't it? That's really what the message out of this is. Anyway, I noticed that in the news. What else have you seen? Have you seen anything exciting? Oh, there's something about Amazon and AI in their vans and people complaining. So if you yawn when you're driving an Amazon delivery truck, then the system tells you to pull over for 15 minutes because it reads that you're tired.
I saw that. I'm not quite sure if it's in Europe at the moment or whether it's just based in the US, but I saw that and it looks at a range of things. They've got a camera in, kind of facing into the cab and externally to the cab for monitoring you at all times, isn't it? And kind of responding in a way to counter any kind of risks, I guess. So if you're speeding, it might tell you to slow down. If you're tired, it tells you to stop and have a break, that kind of thing.
Yes, quite so.
All quite interesting. It'll be interesting to see whether it's automated decision making as well. If you're caught speeding and it asks you to pull over at the police station and self-report yourself.
Yeah. Dilik highlighted today a hack at Mensa, again, weak passwords. She thought it was funny that the smartest people had the worst passwords.
For sure. I saw that one as well. The other thing I'd looked at quickly, and we may have mentioned it in the last week possibly, that there's been a spate of enforcement action by the ICO relating to marketing companies and TPS screening.
I've not seen that. Is that just the last couple of weeks?
The enforcement dates are the 27th of January. So there's four or five different companies. Basically, it's all contravention of PECA in relation to using TPS numbers. The highest award was for Ancom Security, which was 110,000 for a breach of PECA. And calling over 500,000 people who were registered on TPS.
Yeah, I mean, the TPS bit's easy to get a head around, isn't it? I mean, Ollie and I were discussing this morning that somebody wants to use LinkedIn information, which is often personal email addresses, but you know, everyone thinks of LinkedIn as a corporate kind of business platform for sending out a newsletter. I mean, the newsletter isn't necessarily marketing the way it's been written and structured, but you know, we're in this discussion saying, well, you know, if you've got philbrining@googlemail.com off LinkedIn, then you need consent to send an unsolicited amount of marketing, despite being a business function, it's a private email address. The TPS bit is obvious, isn't it? But the email bit is still, I think, you know, the ICO's clarified it an awful lot, but there's still these cases we think, you know, how far, you know, should you know, what is the applicable rule set? It's still an area I think that's very grey. I don't know if you think it's covered in clear cut.
Well, on that, I was just going to kind of try and link that back to the comments you started at the very beginning in relation to the e-privacy and whether, although we're not in Europe, whether if the e-privacy comes out, whether the ICO will look at that or whether the UK will look at that and also follow suit with changing rules and regulations around it. We start to diverge or return where we are with things. So it'll be certainly interesting. So I think the privacy, hopefully, if they can actually agree to it, will kind of tidy up some of those areas as well. But that's yet to be seen.
Yeah. So UK Safe Internet Day. There's a website actually that's, but it's all focused on resources for children. You know, trying to educate children. So there's, you know, PowerPoint presentation and storybooks you can download for anywhere from 3 up to 19. And there's all sorts of stuff there. But really, the whole point of this is to try and, you know, present a day where, you know, you can jump all over safer internet. And you know, from an employer's position, you know, we can be reminding people about things like passwords we've just discussed and other practices. And you know, as a private individual, we can take the time to, you know, take stock of what we've got. But I wonder if these days, I mean, we were celebrating International Privacy Day last week, weren't we? I just wonder whether these days actually have any effect. You know, this one particularly, you know, is it well known? Is it you know, used by people to drive their messages through in their businesses?
I think it's probably going to be gaining ground. It's certainly I've been advising my clients to look for days like these within the calendar and start building internal comms or a program of internal comms relating to data protection and safe information handling and things, using similar kind of events to kind of springboard from, because there's usually free material you can use and download and kind of promote. So it's to try and have that as a part of an internal comms message and factored into the wider internal comms kind of push for communications, I think we'll only start to springboard. The Safer Internet website that you referred to, I'd looked at, it is kind of child-specific and child-focused. So you might find within certain sectors it might get greater coverage of things like within the schools and colleges, or in those kind of areas to kind of push it working with children to protect themselves and to make sure that they're safer use of the internet.
Yeah, and it is specifically internet, isn't it? So this isn't. I mean, the whole point of it is to focus on cyber security and internet security rather than security per se. But it's a good idea to do something, you know, put some posters out, you know, and whatever else, you know, remind people of what they could be doing, should be doing. But there's still quite a lot of breaches that occur, aren't there, Dave Ollie, through you know, cyber risk, you know, what as well as breaches, you know, exposing individuals to risks. Like I was reading some of the stuff on that site about trolling and sexting and, you know, new rules around gambling, and there's the whole issue about, you know, deep fake porn. You know, so people who are having their content stolen and then misused, it's still a massive issue, not to mention fraud. I mean, there's huge amounts of fraud still out there.
There's different elements, isn't it? Because you're absolutely right with everything that you mentioned there, but there's also the other very negative side with whether it's fact or opinion that you're reading, and whether some of it's discriminatory in any way. Or if you're trying to use, not trying to bring Donald Trump back, but if you're trying to use Donald Trump's words, alternative facts. So you've got that kind of very dangerous world of misinformation and things that are being pushed out there, in addition to, like you said, the all the sexting and all the online stalking and bits and pieces that you can get from the internet.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there's, you know, we can use some of the, you know, standards. So I was doing some work on the PCI model for a customer just yesterday, actually, and you know, I was saying, well, you know, the key to this, you know, I like the PCI goals: build and maintain a secure network, you know, protect data, maintain a vulnerability management program, implement strong access control measures, you know, monitor and test your networks regularly, and maintain a policy and disseminate it. You know, at a high level, that's really simple stuff, isn't it? When the devil's in the detail, when you start unpacking that and going into it, then it's, well, what do you mean by building and maintaining a secure network? But as a model, I think it makes a lot of sense. And I've used that for years, actually, since I started working with PCI DSS in 2008.
And I think it is. And I think it's something that could easily be translated into advice and guidance for home use of the internet, because if you're talking about safer internet use, we're not just talking about employees, we can also talk about the home life and maybe protecting your family or your children when they're online, and understanding your own Wi-Fi settings or the control measures that your ISP may provide with restricting access to certain sites and things. So I think simple guidance from in those kind of things in the rounds of what you said, but obviously targeted to a domestic setting would certainly be helpful for a lot of people, because I'm sure a lot of people maybe won't be aware of the control measures that they could apply to their own use of the internet in order to control and have safer use.
I mean, one of the things I've been interested in to catch up on this new version of the e-privacy regulation is because they were suggesting it was going to start regulating Internet of Things devices. And I read that there's a robotic dog you can buy. It's about £40,000 built in California. And this robotic dog's now got a web interface, so you can control the robotic dog from anywhere you want. Whereas before that, I had a short field control. So, you know, securing all these devices is key, isn't it? I mean, I'm into my beer brewing. I have a hydrometer which sits in the beer as it's fermenting, and the alcoholic content is calculated by the angle that it's tilting at, and that's all transmitted over Wi-Fi. So not particularly exciting if you intercept my data, but there's other people who are using, you know, all sorts of Internet of Things devices. I mean, we were talking Ring doorbell the other day, weren't we? So this is all really about safer internet, isn't it? You know, if these things get compromised or these platforms get compromised, or your device gets compromised, then it can cause a lot of trouble.
For sure, and it's maybe needing to pick more of your brains on this element as well. But whether it's, say, for example, if you had an Internet of Things, say like an electronic door or even a fridge or something that was connected to the internet, in that sense, or a dog in California. If you hacked a dog, could you get into your system and your network via that route? And what security measures do you need to protect the wider network if it's linked in that way?
Well, there was that famous breach, wasn't there, in America where the casino got its database of customers stolen through people hacking into a thermometer in a fish tank. So you could either control the dog and go and get it to, it's got this thing on its nose that, you know, it can reach a meter, can open doors and all sorts of things. So you can actually get it to go and open the property and let you in. Or you could potentially hack a network on the back of any vulnerabilities on it. So quite interesting, really. Ollie, you're very quiet. What did you do yesterday then in terms of security? Did you got any thoughts on internet security?
Yeah, I mean, more sort of broadly speaking, and I think it would be interesting just to circle back very quickly, because you were mentioning whether these days in the calendar are actually effective in any way. You know, whether we do sufficient possibly awareness around it, whether it's an opportunity for training which is sufficiently exploited. And I was thinking about this in preparation this morning, and whether sort of some of these days are possibly an opportunity for us to just prompt as an organization a review of certain other things, because sort of taking the wider internet point, and it's possibly maybe less of a security issue, but it possibly ties in, is I've been working closely with one of our clients recently on their cookie compliance. And you've mentioned the Privacy Directive already, but I've been working closely with them, and it's come to light that, you know, we did a big cookie review on one of their websites, because they operate a couple, and it turns out they basically haven't got a clue of what's happening on there. You know, this list has been returned, and half of them, we don't know what they're doing, so we're having to get the developers in, and they're not entirely sure, and we're looking to have a big clean out of it all. The bottom line being that none of it's compliant currently, which obviously is a big concern. The cookie banner's not up to date, the cookie policy's not up to speed, so we need to get that sorted. But I think there's sort of a wider point to be made of sort of understanding generally the operation of your website as an organization and sort of how it works. Dave, if you catch your mind back, we dealt with an incident a couple of weeks ago, actually for this same client, funnily enough, where they had potentially had a data breach because they've been working with a third party supplier who had introduced a specific script onto their website with their, you know, consent. It was all above board, but this script was potentially scraping personal data out of URLs being posted across different pages of the website. And this only came to light after quite an in-depth investigation. But clearly you've got a security risk there. I mean, we got our pen testing partners in off the back of this to go and have a look, and according to them it was all above board. I still need to read the report, but it just sort of highlights, I think, at least quite a good point, which is that, you know, maybe it's an opportunity these days to take a look at what you've actually got in place and reassess, because maybe you're not quite as aware as you should be, or not as aware as you should be, of what's actually happening on your website. I don't know if either of you have
I think that's a really valid point, because I do remember the case now when we were speaking about it, and it looked like there was maybe certainly not the case, but like a code injection, that on the first thought, when we first looked at the information that was presented to us, whether it and whether the usernames, or was it the password, wasn't correctly hashed. So it looked like you were potentially having by having this code injected onto your website, that whoever was doing it could potentially be taking username and login details.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was the initial concern, wasn't it? I mean, I know, like you say, our partners looked at it, the pen test people looked at it for them. And bits and pieces, but your initial concern is, like you said, do you know the risks with your website? Have you had it checked out? Do you know if there's these kind of backdoor ways into the information that's retained on your website in CMS or anything else that's on a web-facing application?
Absolutely, and I think it is something to consider as part of this. I mean, I know, Phil, you mentioned at the start that realistically Safer Internet Day is primarily aimed at children, for starters, then, and also the user. But I think it's probably interesting to sort of take a look at it from the organization's perspective, both in terms of safeguarding your own users. So we could probably talk in a bit about things like strong password management, because I've got quite an interesting anecdote about that actually saved up. But then sort of, yeah, generally about compliance issues. We're talking about this specific case, but also, and I hate to bang on about cookies, but I did see something quite interesting on the CNIL's website just this morning, in that the CNIL are being really proactive on their enforcement of cookies, and they've actually set up a, I suppose you'd call it a bureau, to monitor the 1,000 most visited websites in France, and where those websites are placing where they are placing cookies without consent from 6 different third parties, then they're actually reaching out to them proactively and saying, look, this isn't compliant, which I thought was an interesting approach. It's them taking a strong stance on it and actually affecting change, making recommendations. But I think this all ties into this concept of internet security, I would argue anyway.
No, I think you're right. I mean, going back to what you were talking about earlier, I mean, where's the problem? How do these things arise? I mean, is it that you've got different people managing the internet and making decisions on cookies, and different people again, you know, writing policy? So, you know, what is the problem? You know, how is it that they've got into that situation? Is it lack of coordination? Is it, you know, insufficient management, insufficient documentation? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's an interesting point, because I think you see it across sort of all levels of an organization. You see these issues crop up, whether it's from that perspective that we're discussing, where sometimes you might not be aware of a vulnerability, or there's something that you've introduced on your website that maybe you don't understand as well as you should. But even lower down, sort of, we've seen instances, even quite recently, of individuals within our clients' organizations, or even third parties that we might work with, falling for sort of really quite basic phishing attacks and phishing emails. And, you know, it's easy for us possibly as privacy professionals to look at that and go, well, how on earth could you fall for that? You know, it's so poorly formatted, that's clearly not a real email. But the flip side of that is that clearly highlights an issue, whether it's with training and awareness or otherwise. I don't know what it might be. I'd say it's primarily those two things. But, you know, there's clearly an issue there, especially as some of these phishing attacks increasingly gain really quite sophisticated at times. I've received a few in the last 6 months, which I wouldn't say almost fallen for, but I've sort of done a double take and gone, that's actually quite advanced.
Really. I have seen one from a phishing attack, but it's more whaling, so a kind of more refined form of phishing, where it's aimed at directors and directors of an organisation. Now the individual, the email looked like it had come from the director, and bits and pieces sent to this contact that I know, and he said if it wasn't for the fact that the guy always refers to my contact by his first initial, so say for example if his name was James, he'd always refer to him as Jay and then tell him what to do and then end with the director's initial, so in Phil's case it'd be like P, that kind of thing. And it came with all the niceties around it. So it said, hi, James, please could you do this? It's his best regards, Phil. And he went, and I knew that was a dodgy email because he would just never word his email that way. But if it wasn't looking at the content as such and the surrounding areas, he said you would have honestly thought it was a legitimate email from the individual.
Yeah, it can be really quite sophisticated. I saw one recently, which I helped a client with, where it was, you know, sometimes you might get those automated emails from, if you use Outlook, where someone's trying to share a file with you. And it sort of says, X wants to share this file, click the link and whatever. And, you know, those are a lot of the time legitimate emails. But I saw one come through, which was a phishing attack. And it was, you know, really quite.
I got one this morning, from one of our associate consultants who was saying, you know, do you still need to share this folder, click here. I haven't a clue what this is about, so I just did my usual trick of ignoring it.
That's why you've not answered me, Phil.
Say again.
I said that's why you've not answered me.
So we've got a couple of points and questions on the chat. We just run through. So Rick's saying, is being made aware of specialist databases you can buy with the mass email business to business basis, and he feels uncomfortable. I think this is a dodgy area, and Ollie and I were talking about this earlier on, weren't we? We have a client who wants to do some work of this type of nature, and it, you know, if you're buying any data, and we talked about this last week, didn't we? You're buying some data, you know, fine, well, it hasn't been that the individuals haven't been given a privacy notice which states that you will be a recipient of that data, so therefore theoretically, you know, it's been unfairly processed in the very outset. If you then buy that list and immediately send people a privacy notice. I've just bought this list and I'm going to do this with it. You know, does that negate that initial unfair processing? So we haven't come up with we haven't thought about it since, have we? But does that negate the initial unfairness, or is that unfairness absolutely baked into any other use of that data going forward? We haven't thought about it since, have we? But that was what we talked about last week. So these database lists, I mean, the ICO's guidance, which is still in draft form on direct marketing and relating to the PECA, says that you don't need consent to email business to business unsolicited direct marketing by email. So, you know, but what's the definition of business to business? Well, PECA is about corporate subscribers. So, as we said about earlier on, if it's a private email address, then it ain't a corporate subscriber, it's a private subscriber. So the whole area is, I think it's a lot clearer, but it's clever. Then you've got businesses saying, well, you know, everybody else does it. If I stick to the letter of the law, then, you know, I'm going to be commercially disadvantaged. So often people then are weighing up the risk of getting caught and the cost of getting caught against the commercial benefit of using data like this. And, you know, that's I guess their prerogative. I suppose if you were risk assessing it, you'd be looking at the scale, you know, how many emails am I likely to send, on what frequency, you know, are people likely to complain, or should you be doing something else? You don't need consent to make unsolicited direct marketing phone calls person to person, therefore maybe ring around and try and build a mailing list. So it's not easy, is it? It's still a I think a difficult area. And really, if you haven't got consent, you know, you can't get consent, you know, can you, from electronic means? You've got to try and obtain consent in a different way. That's what how the PECA's put together.
For sure, there was a couple of case law, wasn't there, a couple of years ago now, I think it was. Was it Flybe and Honda?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Trying to get e-consent or something. They were trying to get consent, weren't they, by using emails. And the ICO said that you can't get consent by electronic means if you haven't already got it.
Yeah. But it basically means you're locked out now. You know, if you had consent prior to the GDPR coming into effect, you know, because that's redefined the notion of consent, then, you know, you're in a better position than if you're trying to build a mailing list now from legacy data. You can build a mailing list from new data you acquire because you can step through the right hoops. But and our charity clients really struggle with this, don't they? Because they're trying to address, for fundraising purposes, legacy database. Some people have been on their database for 20, 30 years, but if they haven't got demonstrable, then theoretically and in practical terms, they're not allowed to send those people any direct marketing materials without them being specifically requested. Tricky one, isn't it?
It certainly is, and unfortunately, and maybe not just linked solely to the charity sector, but it does touch slightly on the need to have a clear data management on your CRM systems, because I certainly know some charities where they'd have flags and markers against the CRM saying not to contact somebody because it was logged there, not necessarily because the individual said do not contact, but because that person was being put through, say, like a major donor program, for example, and they didn't want general communications being sent to them. But then that individual leaves, and there's no kind of structured data management in the process. So you've got this flag on the database saying do not contact, and nobody's aware of where it's come from or what it actually refers to.
Yeah.
So that hamstrings.
Farine is saying that she knows somebody who's got 60 branches, you know, a fairly large company, got hacked and, you know, ransomware attack. In fact, I was reading a paper this morning, and it was, you know, the six predictions for 2021 in terms of privacy and cybersecurity, and one of them was a continued growth of ransomware attacks. And we've had a couple of customers, haven't we? One, in fact, a charity who were hit with a ransomware attack. Well, they weren't actually. Their IT supplier was, and it took all their systems out for 6 weeks, their finance system, their database system, their fundraising system, their lottery system. So, you know, you got a massive disruption. So, you know, if you cannot access your data, the ICO is your least of your worries. Have I got a business to go back to when we finally get out of this? You know, the ransom payment, also the least of your worries. You know, you end up with a complete, and the BA has still got this legacy. You were talking about this earlier in the week, weren't you, Dave? You know, BA's legacy from the breach they've got, the lasting aftershocks, both at TalkTalk and BA, with these class actions that they're pursuing for damages. Massive impact.
For sure. And some of the figures that I've seen being bandied around for the potential cost of compensation for British Airways dwarfs the fine that the ICO gave them. I think it's in the tune of something like 800 million upwards, and yet the ICO fine was only 20. So it's
Ollie, I'm dying.
It's huge.
Yeah, I'm dying to hear all these anecdotes. I what do you think about password vaults? You know, like 1Pass or LastPass or whatever. You know, I've always worried about those, and I think the SolarWinds hack means that you're right to worry about them. So SolarWinds is a tool set to monitor and manage systems, isn't it? Got hacked through compromised updates, and that means that, you know, there's a vulnerability on the tools that you're using to monitor and manage your real estate, your IT cyber real estate. If that vulnerability is exploited and there's personal data available, then you've got all sorts of problems. But, you know, if you had your password vault hacked, you know, but a lot of people use them, don't they? What's your thoughts about password vaults?
It's
like, I want to hear your anecdote on this.
It's like you've read my mind, Phil. That's exactly what I was going to talk about.
About that. Soldier
no,
thunder.
No. It's fine. It's related to that. So as part of this morning, I was digging around because I had to reset a password for something, just because I'd forgotten it. And now I use an Apple iPhone. Other brands are available. But they have a keychain system, which is what you're talking about, essentially a password vault. And you can store all your passwords for all your websites on your phone. And I was looking at it today, and it also includes in the latest update, and I don't know if anyone else uses this, but they have a feature which is security recommendations. So they basically flash up all your passwords and say, well, you've got X for, you know, you've got this password for this website, this one for that. And then it will tell you if you've reused any passwords, or if any passwords you're using are too weak, or if some of them have actually been compromised because they've been found to be part of a data leak, which I thought was a really excellent feature. Anyone who can benefit from that, I'd strongly recommend that you go and have a fiddle with it, because it is just quite interesting. The thing being about all of this is that we know as privacy professionals what good password management entails. We know all about it. And I think it's easy to possibly sort of roll your eyes when someone starts saying, oh, but how am I supposed to remember however many passwords? Stop asking me to change them. I can't remember, et cetera, et cetera. And it's easy for us to go, well, these are the reasons that you have to have strong password management in place. But I just checked this morning, and it turns out I've reused some passwords quite a lot, and that's bad. And I was really quite annoyed with myself with it when I actually saw the statistics about it, because fundamentally, I think it's a thing of habit, you know, sometimes possibly. And the number of passwords that you do have these days, I say it's easy to roll your eyes, but the fact is that the number of accounts and passwords you'll have across different platforms, even silly things like, you know, I might have an account for, you know, a football forum or something. There's no details on there other than my email address and a password that I've made up. But still, that might be reused just accidentally. And
that's the worry into it, Ollie. If credentials in a weak system, a weakly protected system, that's your vulnerability.
Absolutely. And so as a result, I won't tell you the number because frankly it's actually a bit embarrassing, and I'm working on it this weekend. That's a lovely little task for me to go and update all my passwords. But it was something I was quite frustrated with myself about. But, you know, at a certain point, it's sort of easy to understand that even if, you know, people who work in the industry are capable of slip-ups like that, the regular user, you know, do they even stand a chance with this sort of thing?
Well, this report was referring to these like six trends issues to watch for in 2021. Ransomware, you know, is now available as a service, so you can buy ransomware as a service. This is funny, isn't it? Everything's got an AAS acronym to it now. So ransomware as a service, RAAS, is available. You can buy someone to you know, execute a ransomware attack on your behalf. And because people have paid ransoms, the market is massively in global market for this is massively increased. So yeah, that's worrying really, because you know, I don't think anybody is really safe, are they really?
Is there? I was just going to ask a question, Phil. Is there a way to kind of protect against ransomware, such as running a mirror server system, in real time, so you could switch one off and switch the other one on. And if you could, for example, would then that be classed as state-of-the-art thinking, and which what everybody should be going towards, or not?
Well, I think everyone's standard approach is to make sure you've got a good backup regime, and you know that's a good way of doing it. But there's a chance you'll kind of mirror whatever the vulnerability is over into your other environment.
I worked for an organization that had a ransomware attack, but they're able to, in essence, and it's more technical than I can get my gray cells around, but in essence, literally just switched off one service and flicked to the backup server that was being backed up in real time and just ran off that one, and there wasn't a problem with it. But what that might mean in between, and all the technical jargon going in between, I'm not sure, but they were able to do that. It still meant IT. Or the IT department then had to spend the next 8 or 10 hours cleaning up the old server, because it had the ransomware on that one. But they're able to have very little impact as a consequence of that.
Yeah, I think it depends on the systems. I mean, way that we, in the, you know, a few years ago now, we used to get a weekly output of all our Salesforce data as a set of CSV files. So you've got the data. You've got no functionality, you know, so you haven't got any business process there, but you've got the data. So if everything goes pear-shaped, you know, you've got the data, but you're using the Excel to work with it. So I think you have to look at what you've got and work out your vulnerabilities and see what is available. You know, and, you know, Salesforce has got, you know, external backups, and we've got external backups to our SharePoint as well. But I'm not convinced, you know, Dave, that this stuff is impregnable. I'm not convinced at all about it.
Absolutely, and I don't understand the technology sufficient enough. So if there's anybody listening online that wants to unmute and to help out with the conversation, by all means, please do. But my concern, and again, I don't know how it happened, but my concern is whether you'd end up just mirroring the ransomware, and then instead of having a kind of a DRBC thing going on, you've got ransomware across both sets of servers, if that kind of makes sense. So it's... I do get the concern that you might mirror across, but A, I don't know whether you can, and B, I don't know if there's anything that you could do to stop that from happening. Without speaking to somebody who's got a lot more technical knowledge than I have.
Jason's talking about a solution to ransomware called Cloudian data, called immutable data. Someone's given that a thumbs up. I don't know how these thumbs up works, but someone's given it a thumbs up, so maybe people are aware about it. I'm not seen it and come across it. So is that your
Can I chip in, Phil?
Yes, well, please do. Yeah.
I attended a webinar on this a couple of days ago, and it is basically a process by which the backup is made immutable, which is that it is completely object locked. It is absolutely incapable of being changed in any way. And therefore, it foils any ransomware attack, because their vector will always be to try and access the backup and encrypt that backup. It sounded fascinating, but I guess it's probably extraordinarily expensive. And that's all I know about it so far.
That's interesting, though, because you're kind of highlighting the motive of and the method of the attacker. To encrypt all instances of the data. So, you know, if what you're saying is if you can isolate, maybe it's your point, Dave, if you can isolate a copy of the data that isn't accessible by the attackers, then maybe that's your route out of a ransomware attack. I also don't know enough about it. It's a highly technical area, isn't it?
Yeah, the only fear for me would be, and I'm not party to this, should it happen, it's only kind of the fear, would be that if the ransomware, instead of just locking your system, actually access the data, and so do you either pay a fee or release it, because you then, if you've got kind of an isolated backup that you can refer to, you've still got the problem of the data being disclosed. It's not just pay the fee and you can have it back.
Yeah. So, right, there's nothing else really. There's a couple of Rick's asked a question, which I'm not sure I understand. I had a query recently. Does anyone know if DNS queries are sold for profiling to the internet? I've got no idea. I know what DNS is. I'm not sure I know what a DNS query is, and I'm not sure whether they're commercially available. So I'm not sure I can help there. What else have we got to talk about around this safer internet day? Anything else to talk about, Dave?
The thing that it kind of immediately kind of links to for me, because obviously the Safer Internet Day website was aimed at children. So the thing that you then think of, well, if you've got safer internet, whether it's Internet of Things, whether you got your website or anything else that's targeted towards children in particular, whether you're then going to have to start thinking about the age appropriate design code of practice, in essence. So although it's not necessarily looking at being safe on the internet, but it's just making sure you do comply with that other code of practice.
Thank you, Jase. Jase has put a link in if anybody wants it to Cloudian to have a look at that. Thank you. Ollie, what else have you got to say on this subject? It feels to me, if I'm being honest, like it's been a bit of a woolly subject. I wish I'd say for Internet Day, but anyway, next week we're talking about accountability, which is much more familiar to stomping ground. Ollie, anything you want to add on to this?
Not particularly, other than if you're on the call now, check your password management. That's my lesson for the day, off the back of lesson being revealed my statistics. So go and change your passwords.
And if you're going to follow Ollie's advice as well, I would also, just to back that up with, do Google the National Cybersecurity Centre's, I think they've got the 25 most commonly used passwords. And if one of your passwords appear on there, I would suggest you change it anyway.
I mean, do you want to work to Everton? You know, the most popular password in the system that people use was that Everton 1878. So it's odd. Anyway, I'm going to invite Dave Hendry. I don't know if I'm going to get told off for this, Dave, but we've got a webinar we're doing with MRI in a couple of weeks' time, specifically for the housing sector. Is this something we should be talking about here, Dave, in this forum or not? Am I talking about Cernia?
Phil, no, by all means. I mean, it's obviously relating to the housing sector in particular, but any it's open to any anyone really in the sector that has an interest in it. Obviously, you're aware of the agenda, but yeah, and it's housing specific, open to anyone to join. Obviously, it's an hour breakfast briefing. Is it the 18th?
It's a model, and we're talking about compliance, and it's really talking about data. We talk about the white paper in housing and how that information regime might shape out and effect it's going to have. So it should be quite a good quick hour, shouldn't it, really? But there's four of us speaking, four different companies. So how do people find out about that if they're interested, Dave?
So there'll be some marketing comms going out from ourselves in the next probably next day or so. MRI have already pushed some information out on a newsletter to all their subscribers. So it'll just be on our LinkedIn website, LinkedIn website, Twitter, that type of thing. And anyone that's on any mailing list should receive those from the various companies as well.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that. So sorry if I was talking out of turn, but
no, it's fine. It's fine.
You know me. So I think, we've probably exhausted the Safer Internet. I don't think we've exhausted it. I think we've probably exhausted what we know about it, to be quite honest. So next week, I think we're going to be talking about accountability, aren't we? So that'd be interesting. So I want to dig into a bit more detail about the ICO's accountability framework. And I was reviewing our audit report yesterday, actually. And designed by default. When we've been on site, I don't know if Dilik wants to dive in and comment. In the past, the auditing of accountability was always a bit floppy, but we've actually in the last few months started. So, well, hang on, the accountability framework's been around for some time. We're going to audit people against that. It's not necessarily all legally binding, but it's certainly a good framework. So anyway, we're going to be talking about that next week. So that should be quite a good session, shouldn't it? Back on our familiar stomping ground. And hopefully we'll have an answer on, again, Jason asked this last week about the frozen GDPR. I think we'll try and pick up on that next week as well. So anything more to add, Dilik or Dave or Ollie, or I don't know if Jasmine's on, is Jazzy on?
Well, nothing to add.
I'll take that.
Nothing to add from
Sorry, guys. I forgot that I was on mute. The only thing I'd like to add around the security side of things is that I know every single client of mine does security or network or infrastructure monitoring. They do tons of that. And that is a very key tool that will alert you or the organization as to something's not right or something that should be investigated, and that sort of stuff. So I would say focus some efforts and make sure that that's been regularly monitored. Usually with most of my clients, yeah. They have...
Actually, it reminds me...
Hmm? Hello?
I think Phil's just upset a bit.
I was just saying that I've now have clients who are focusing more staff time to actually review them more frequently. So instead of whenever someone's got time available, it's kind of embedded as a first thing in the morning check to make sure that they are of... they're aware of those, and that anything that needs to be critical, medium to high risk areas or things that need to be focused, they focus those efforts. And a lot of the time they find that actually their antivirus or anti-prevention detection, you name it, intrusion detection, they usually can quarantine a lot of things. So I would say focus some efforts around the monitoring logs.
Just reminded me, Dilly, we did a cyber maturity assessment for a company a couple of weeks ago, just early January, and they asked to come in. They thought they were the bee's knees, and you know, I was surprised actually how immature their systems were. So they didn't do any logging, for instance. They had no logs of access and things like that. They had lots of people, including external contractors, using shared login administrator accounts. Well, I mean, this is just, you know, ludicrous. I mean, we talk about safer internet, you know, and safe systems and security. Well, you know, those kind of practices are just unbelievable. No security awareness training, you know, the obvious stuff. So this is not just about technical solutions. It's about getting your people on board into it as well, getting them on side through an awareness program. So I think Farry did a really good job there. We've got a meeting to debrief the client next week and help them derive an action plan. But it's interesting, it's kind of looking at cyber maturity. So, you know, there are controls, controls that exist, and how mature are they? And are they, you know, is this organization, you know, ranking and benchmarking well against others in its sector as a food manufacturing business? In fact, we did a big piece of work for an ice cream, the biggest ice cream producer in Europe, didn't we, 2 years ago? You really focused on their database systems. And our view was that their biggest vulnerability was their industrial manufacturing systems. So that, you know, the system and the valves and the storage and the temperature control, because if they got hacked, then their business was pretty much, you know, in trouble, we thought to a much greater extent than their customer database systems, because it was really just selling ice creams to big businesses. But that's what they wanted to focus on, you know, focus on our databases. We were saying, I'm looking at the wrong stuff here. If your factory gets taken out, you're stuck. Anyway, thank you, Dilik, for that. That's, what are you up to at the weekend? Anything exciting? It's passwords.
No, I'm just dealing with roofers. For me, no passwords. My passwords are all good.
All right, good. What are you doing, Dave? What are you doing next week? Busy? Oh, you're training next week, aren't you, Dilik? I forgot about that. What are you doing next week?
I will be doing... So I've recently finished the ISO 27001, the lead implementer course. I will be doing the lead auditor. So 5 days I will be out of use next week. So that's what I'll be doing.
Right. Well, good luck with that. It was good fun when I did it, so I hope you enjoy it. What are you up to, Dave?
May I? I think I'll be playing catch up next week, just because this week kind of comes to an end quite quickly. I think I was in a very similar position to Ollie, whereas you kind of woke up and went, "Is it Friday already?" So I've been playing catch up, but I've got quite a bit on with client review work. I've got some project work that I'm going through with clients. I've got a DPR catch up with a couple of other clients. I'm delivering a bit of training next week as well. Which was lucky, because I noticed it wasn't in my calendar when I was looking forward into next week. So I needed to kind of just make sure that was there and appropriately for that. So it's the start of another busy week next week.
Right, very good. Well, I think we've probably, I'm not sure we have exhausted the topic, safer internet day and cyber security. I think it's a huge topic. But I think we've probably run out of time for today. So I think thank you very much to everyone who's joined and those who've participated and contributed. If you've got any questions as ever, just fire them through to us. Next week, as I say, we're talking about accountability in the context of the UK GDPR and the EU GDPR, and to some extent the Data Protection Act, and probably about PECA. So I think we'll probably throw around it and have a look at it. And in the meantime, thanks very much, and have a great weekend and a good next week. And thanks for joining us.
Bye, guys.
Thank you. Take care, all.
Yeah, thanks, all.